Spring has sprung, and big savings are in full bloom at Menards. Visit Menards Garden Center for everything you need to get your garden growing. Choose from hundreds of beautiful, colorful flowers, lush trees and shrubs, and everything in between. Menards Garden Center is back in bloom. Stop in today to get your garden on. Check out fresh deals happening now at Menards. Save big money
at Menards. Fourth and final hour, Darren, Donnick, and Chase here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Show social distancing show number 6. Spit that out and say that 3 times really fast. Darren McFarland, that's me, here representing the south side of town here in Rutherford County. Willie Donnick over on the east side in East Nashville. Chase McCabe on the west side, holding down the fort in Bellevue. Elijah Campbell back at our Wholesale Link Game Studios, powered by RumbleOn.com. We have Elliot Freeman, our weekly chat with him every Thursday at 1 o'clock. He's brought to you by Carrie Zier Remax Elite. Elliot, when we spoke with you this time last week, this was our first time ever doing this, and now it's show number 6. How are things up in your parts?
Probably about the same as they were last week. We're getting kind of bored of each other, but we're making it work. My wife has a standard line: the less I see you, the more I like you, and we're really testing that right now.
We've had some good lines from people that we've already talked to. In fact, we had Kermit Davis on earlier, Ole Miss basketball coach, used to be a coach here at MTSU down the road from us, and he said, this is definitely going to prolong my coaching career, because any aspirations of retiring at an early age, his wife has just told him, yeah, you're going to keep coaching for a while after this experience at home. We're going to find out how strong our family bonds really are during these times. We also had Kirk Casale on in the second hour of today's show. He's a guy who played here at Vanderbilt Baseball, Cincinnati Reds catcher, and mm-hmm. he said that they've had a lot of meetings, and he knows a lot of stuff that hasn't been put out there publicly that he wasn't comfortable sharing with us. But obviously Major League Baseball is trying to figure out the right way to tackle when they come back and how to handle what's left of a season that was supposed to begin today. What do you think the conversations are right now on the NHL side of things, Elliot, of what to do?
I think it's probably pretty similar. There have been calls. You know, we know this week they had a Board of Governors call on Monday. We know they had a GM call on Tuesday. I think there have been conversations around that. I know that teams have had conversations and players have had conversations with, the Players Association. I think there's proposals been put in, submitted about what maybe to do with the playoffs. I think they're looking over those. They're trying to get an idea of a timeline. And I don't think, personally, and we're not going to know probably until about the end of April, beginning of May, kind of really where the timeline is going to be, if anywhere, by that time. I think the other thing, guys, I think they're talking about what are some of the more economic and procedural issues. For example, I know on the conference call yesterday with the GMs, I heard that one of the GMs pointed out that, all contracts end on June 30th in the NHL. The NHL year is July 1st to June 30th. And, if you're a European player or a Canadian player playing in the U.S., that contract is your visa. If, for example, if you're a Nashville Predator and your home is Europe, as some of your Predators are, you're going to be in the playoffs, we think, sometime in July or August. How do you handle that? How do you extend that contract so to make sure that the player is able to play? And I think, it's probably not as difficult a thing as we're talking about here, but these are all the things that are kind of being discussed. And, you guys have referred to the blog I write, 31 Thoughts. One of the things I suspect is going on that they're not telling us is they had been at times trying to negotiate a new CBA. I wouldn't be surprised if somewhere out of this, just like the NFL did 2 weeks ago, and Major League Baseball is working on something right now with their service time, we see the league and the Players Association work on something like that to get a long-term CBA done.
Interesting. Yesterday, the league announced that they've postponed the scouting combines, the NHL awards, the draft up in Montreal. Are you surprised by that? Because we were kind of talking earlier, the NFL has come out and said, even though the GMs aren't happy, like, they're going ahead with their draft at the end of April. And we were saying, with the uncertainty of knowing, you know, not knowing if they come back, when they would start playing, if, like you said, we're talking about June, July, August, what have you, to complete everything, why not, while you've got this window of nothing, why not just stick with, you know, or even move the draft up and go on and do the draft? Because if you don't know, if you're not going to finish till August or September, how you're not going to have your draft until then? So what do you think about that?
Well, I think what that means is more likely they feel that they can't have the draft in a set central place. Like, they're not going to have it in Montreal. So I'm wondering, and what some of the teams suspect is, we may have like an online draft or a video draft or something like that, where instead of each team being together and all those tables in the middle of the draft floor, everybody's in their own conference room or war room or whatever you want to call it.
Sure.
And they do it that way.
But they're going to keep the same date, or they're talking about moving the date?
I don't know if they know what date it's going to be yet. Okay. I don't know if they know that. Like, they have to figure all this stuff out. I mean, one of the things we have to figure out, guys, is, okay, let's just say for argument's sake that they increase the playoffs to 24 teams. So 8 of those teams would be in the draft lottery right now. What happens to them?
Yeah, in terms of the order.
Right. That's what we were discussing yesterday. Like, what do you do about the draft order? Sure.
That's exactly it. And I'll tell you, like I know Detroit. At the Board of Governors meeting this year, which was in December in California, I'd heard Detroit had said a couple of things like, hey, we're clearly struggling here, and we're clearly the worst team, and our odds, I think, are only 18.5%. So, for example, say like a team like Chicago or a team like Montreal would have been in the playoff, would have been in the lottery, but now they're in the playoffs in theory. What do you do with the draft odds? So I think all of is part and parcel of it. That's why I think this is all on hold.
So, Elliot, in the different things that have been thrown out there, do you have any sense of what might be in the lead in terms of what happens if and when they resume? Knowing that it's still going to be a good ways now before they could play again, do you think, for example, the regular season is likely over?
I think the regular season is likely over. However, I've had a couple of GMs now make good points to me. And that is that, let's just say, okay, we'll go again with the 24. And one of the things they were talking with the 24 was the top two teams in each division get a bye. And so it would be in each conference, it would be 5 versus 12, 6 versus 11, you know, the NCAA tournament thing and so on. And whether you play a one-game knockout or you play two games total goals or two games, and if the first team wins in regulation, then the second team has to win in regulation the next day to force sudden death overtime, whatever you do, you know, some GMs point out to me, if you're the team that got the bye, all of a sudden you're not going to play for months and your first game is going to be against a team that's already played two high-pressure games. So I think the regular season is done. But what I could see is, do you have them play two games or two warm-up games? Like, I don't think that they should come back and say, okay, you've got two games, and if your team didn't make the playoffs, you're out. I think they should just say, all right, everybody's back. You're coming back. Here's who's going to the playoffs. And we do it. Two exhibition games or an exhibition game by geography. That's what I would do. But I don't know that that's what's going to happen.
Okay. Do you think there's a consensus that the number is closer to 24 than it is 16 in terms of,
yes,
like, do you think the argument is it'll be more than 16 that resume play?
Yes, I believe it will, and I think there's a couple of reasons there. Number one, guys, you can't come back with something boring. We've seen this is your time where you have to do something unique and different. You like the NHL and the NBA are going to have, if we come back in July or August, they're going to have a unique opportunity because, you know, if we come back in July or August, the NFL won't have started yet and Major League Baseball will be playing regular games. They're not going right to their postseason. Us in the NBA, we'd be going right to meaningful games. So you have a chance to do something spectacular, and I think everybody recognizes it. You can't come back with the same. You have to come with something interesting. And I think that there is an understanding that's what has to happen. The second thing is, and I think this is a big deal, we're a year away from the new U.S. TV contract. And, you know, we're all getting rocked by this. You know, there's nobody who's escaping the financial implications of what's going on here, right? So you have to show that you're still a valuable television property. And the way you come back is with something exciting that attracts eyeballs. And you take a look at, you know, who's the 12th team in the West? It's Chicago. Who's the 12th team in the East? It's Montreal. Those are big eyeball teams. I think you have to find a way to include them.
Last one for me. Do you think playing games with no fans is on the table?
I think it's possible. I don't think it's what anyone wants. I think if you were to list things by priority or want, that would be dead last. Nobody wants games with no fans, but we might face that. I don't think anybody knows that. I think the other thing too, guys, and you and your listeners can answer this. I mean, how comfortable are people going to be towards getting into an arena 20,000 strong if we really don't know where we are yet? So I think that's an impossible thing to answer at this point in time. But I think everybody recognizes it's possible, though it's absolutely undesired.
We're talking to Elliot Friedman of Sportsnet. You brought up the financial implications earlier, Elliot. And I saw yesterday Jim Leitz, Jim Nill of the Dallas Stars are temporarily taking a 50% pay cut to kind of help with some of this, help alleviate. I mean, I feel like this is going to be more of the norm for some of the big-time executives.
I think it will be, too. You know, New Jersey started and then backed away. You know, the owners of the Devils also own the Philadelphia 76ers of the NBA, and it got out through, I think, some of their basketball employees, and you saw they backed down. We've all seen what Boston's done, and Jacobs just doesn't seem to care what anybody says. I think this is going to happen a lot. You know, I think that I know there's been a lot of grumbling about it. You know, I spoke to one person in particular whose contract is up on at the end of this season. And, you know, when it was discussed in his organization, or at least I don't know if it actually was discussed from the top in their organization, but obviously people internally talk about it. You know, his point was, you know, my contract's up at the end of this year. Should I be forced to take a pay cut when I have no guarantee that I'm going to be back next season? I think that's a very fair question. You know, I think that, you know, Jim Leitz and Jim Neal, I think it's, you know, I think at the salaries they probably make, it's a little, I don't think it's ever easier, but I think I can understand why they would feel it would be important to do it, to show it. And I don't begrudge what anybody makes. I think we earn what we earn, and I don't have any problem with what anybody earns. But I do think that there are going to be other people who, whether they don't make as much or their contracts are up, I don't know if they should be forced into that situation. I know at the NHL they've taken pay cuts 25%, but that's over a certain limit. I understand anybody under $75,000 U.S. Doesn't have to take that pay cut. So I hope there's an understanding that there are some employees that are in different situations than others.
With all of that said, I brought up last week with you of could this pause change the mindset of some general managers and contracts that, you know, or whether they're going to re-sign a guy or let him go or something like that. But looking at it from the ownership standpoint, could you see a situation where an owner that had maybe at one point said, you know what, I'm willing to pay this guy this amount of money, going to his GM and saying, hey, we might have to back off a little bit. We might have to change the plan because of all of the dollars that they're losing with this downtime.
Absolutely. I mean, why would hockey be any different than any other business?
Right. Yeah, I mean, you're losing money, so you don't have that money to dish out for some of these contracts.
And, you know, I think the other thing, too, is that there's an understanding right now that the league and the Players Association are going to get together to figure out the cap. They're going to have to come up with a number between them. And I wouldn't be surprised if they do it for multiple years in the future.
I got one more for you, more of a hockey-related question or awards-related question. I've read different articles and different publications lately about, because everybody's bored and now handing out the end-of-the-season awards, and I've seen more people shift towards Roman Josi for the Norris. And I know we had that conversation with you earlier in the season that it looked like it was Carlson's to lose. Have you kind of changed your mindset on that at all?
Yes, I have changed my mindset. It's one or the other. It's going to be Josi or Carlson. I don't see a third option there. I think a couple of things favor your guy. Number one, Nashville's in a playoff position now. I don't think you can win that award if you're not. I think now that the Predators are in a playoff position, that Josi's case has really strengthened. I think the other thing too is that I'm a big believer in, and I don't mean this as a negative, don't take it as a negative, I'm a big believer in recency bias. That when a guy who's kind of out of the conversation a little bit shoots up at the end, I think voters go for that. And I think that, you know, Carlson, I don't want to use the term bored, but he's kind of been the story all year. And Josi is the one who's come on like a house on fire late. And I think that always helps in voting. I think recency bias is a big deal in voting. And I think that helps your guy too.
We've had a lot of fun this week having people tweet us their sports memorabilia. We tweeted out some stuff that in our homes. So, and we've had a lot. We've asked a lot of guests to maybe give their best sports memorabilia piece at home. So how would you answer that?
It's a great question. Jeff Merrick, who co-hosts the podcast with me and co-hosts our Wednesday night National Hockey Show, we did an Instagram Live with this last night, and we showed some stuff. And, you know, there's a couple of things in there that are particularly I found that I really like. And the first year of the Toronto Blue Jays was 1977. And I was born in 1970. And I've got a letter on, or a piece of paper with Blue Jays letterhead on it. And it says, thank you, Elliot, for supporting the Blue Jays. And it's got a bunch of autographs from the 1977 Jays. And that's one of the earliest ones I can remember. And the other thing I have, and I was almost embarrassed to tell this story because I didn't understand the significance of it. I have a piece of paper with a bunch of autographs on it. And when I showed it to someone, and when I was a kid, I didn't appreciate it. But when I showed it to someone when I was older, they actually slapped me. Like, they said, do you know what this is? Like, do you understand the significance of this piece of paper? Because I got it when I was really young, and you're young, and I was a kid at the time, and you're really stupid, and you're like, oh, thanks. And I was actually cleaning my house, and I showed it to someone, and they, like, slapped me. I'm like, are you serious? And it's a small piece of paper, and it's autographed by members of the 1971 Montreal Canadiens.
Wow.
Now, the names on this are Jean Beliveau, Henri Richard, Peter Mahovlich, Guy Lapointe, Jacques Lemaire. Like, I mean, these are Hall of Fame,
wow,
all-time great players. And the reason the guy really slapped me was on that first of all, it was, I think, just once. But he says also, you, the other thing, too, is that it had Frank Mahovlich and Ken Dryden. And Frank Mahovlich was traded that year to Montreal, and Ken Dryden came up at the end of the year and stoned the defending Stanley Cup champion Bruins. So he said this was clearly signed that year after they won the Stanley Cup. And I've always kind of laughed about how when you're young and stupid, you don't appreciate what you have, and that's a perfect example.
Wow. Good story. Hey, you guys be safe, and we'll do it again next Thursday.
All right, guys. By the way, Willie, I like the Keith Hernandez shirt. I thought that looked really good.
And, oh, nice. Thank you. And by the way, speaking of baseball, Elliot, as a minor league farmhand in the Jays system for a brief time, some of the guys on that 77 Blue Jays team were still coaches, J.J. Cannon and Doug Ault. I'm curious if that's on your piece of memorabilia.
Doug Ault is. J.J. Cannon is not. But Doug Ault's name is on there, yes.
But you remember J.J. too, right?
Yeah, he was an outfielder. Yeah, I remember J.J., absolutely. Yeah. I mean, I love baseball. I love watching baseball in the summer. Today was opening day. I had tickets to today's game. And, I mean, obviously it's too bad. There's bigger things than worrying about opening day in baseball today. But opening day is always one of the highlights of my year on the sporting calendar.
We just had Blue Jays catcher Caleb Joseph on last week. If you get a chance, get to know him, Elliot. He is quite the character. He's a Nashvillian. Caleb Joseph.
He's a huge hockey fan. A huge hockey fan.
Well, if he's from Nashville, he's got to be a great guy, right?
Great guy. You'll love your conversations with him if you get a chance to catch up with him.
All right. I will do it. I will tell him some guys in Nashville said, you're a good guy. Don't disappoint me.
Thanks for doing this.
All right, guys. You take care. Have a great week.
All right. You too. Elliot Friedman. Brought to you every week by Carey Zire Remax Elite. 31 Thoughts, Sportsnet, Hockey Night in Canada. He does a lot up there. And as you just heard, an avid, avid baseball fan. We'll come back. More of Darren Donick and Chase here on ESPN 102.5 The Game.